I'm Hilda Savage. My maiden name was Sailor. I think my most prominent one is being at a train station, and they told me that it was in Monroe, Michigan, that my mother took my sister and I to Germany in 1931. At the train station, I didn't want to leave my father. He was coming later. We left in October and came back the following May. He was coming after Christmas because he was in the nursery business and could not leave at that particular time. So my mother took my sister and I to Germany to visit the grandparents that were still alive, the aunts and uncles. Not wanting to leave my father, I hid. And they had to search all over for me because the train was ready to leave and my dear uncle, Anton Sailor of Monroe, Michigan, was going crazy and finally found me hidden under a bench. And I was put on the train at the age of 4 screaming for my father. And all the way to New York, my mother said, I kept saying, I want to go back to Erie, Michigan. I don't want to be on this train. One of the things that I remembered, though, after I calmed down a little bit on the train was that my mother had packed a lunch for us because it was too expensive to buy food on the train. And if we wanted a drink of water, and this, I can't believe I'm remembering this, there were like cone-shaped cups, and you had to put a penny in order to get the cup out.
Really?
And then you would push something, and then you would get a certain amount of water.
Wow.
And so, of course, we always thought we wanted a drink of water.
Yeah.
I don't remember anything about getting on the boat.
Mm-hmm.
But I do remember some incidences. I mean, at the age of, I was 4 in November, and we left in October, yeah. But I do remember some of, my sister was 18 months, by the way. I do remember some of the incidences on the boat. One of the incidences was when they were loading the ship. I don't know the name of the ship. But when they were loading it, they had the hold was open, and the crane was bringing things down.
Mm-hmm.
And my mother had me sitting on a chair off to the side, and my sister, who was 18 months, had toddled over and was looking down into the hold of the ship.
Oh my gosh.
My mother walked up to her and grabbed her coat and pulled her back because she would have fallen in because she was so interested in seeing what was going on. The one thing that I do remember is that they had a children's party aboard the ship, and that was for all the children, and we had wore fancy hats and we had special foods and everything, and they made, I remember, the most beautiful molded pudding, and I was really fascinated with that because I hadn't seen anything that beautiful before.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember any more of the trip until when we got to my grandmother's house.
And how long of a boat ride was it over there?
I have no idea. I think probably it was about 7 or 8 days aboard the ship. And we were not seasick going over because the flow of the Atlantic is such that you don't get seasick going over. It's coming back.
Mm-hmm.
But we got seasick. But anyhow, going over. So then, it's really hard. I don't have any recollection of riding the train down to my grandmother's house.
Mm-hmm.
And it was probably a whole day's ride because my grandmother lived in a little tiny village that had 4 houses west of Ulm in Germany. And in order to heat the house, I remember she had a great big stove, a stove, But it was a stove, something like at the art museum, only it didn't have the fancy ceramics and everything, that they had in the corner of the little house. And my uncle would bring the wood in, and we would stoke that. And she also baked in it. There was a big baking oven, and my sister and I would watch her bake the bread, which she did, you know, every 3 or 4 days she would bake fresh bread, and the smell was wonderful.
Yeah.
And on the back of the stove, she always put a very, very wonderful apple, because it... she would set these apples up there, and they would sort of bake in the open. They weren't put in the oven or anything. And they would get sort of mushy, and then we would eat those with our supper. Yeah, it was, oh, they were so good. And it was a very, very good apple. And my father brought those grafts back from Germany in 1949, when he was out there with my mother for after the war, and he brought the grafts back, and we still have those. Are those big apples?
Oh, okay.
That are
really?
He snuck them in in beer steins. One of the things that I remember in being in Germany at that time was our Christmas, and the Christmas tree had real candles on it.
Oh, wow.
And it was only lit on Christmas Eve for a short time, and then then the candles would go out.
I remember hearing about that, like my grandma or my mammy doing that. But I heard they stopped doing it just because of like fires and things like that.
Yeah.
You guys never ran across that, did you?
Well, they only lit it for just a short time so that everybody could see it, and then they were put out because they didn't have electric. Yeah, they had electric lights, but I mean they didn't have strings of lights like we do today, you know. But it was very traditional. The Germans actually were the ones that initiated the Christmas tree.
Oh, really?
Martin Luther King did, and he the Christmas tree is sort of symbolic of Christ's life, and so they put lights on trees, you know. And it's really fascinating. But one of the things that St. Nicholas came on the 5th of December and did not come on Christmas. Santa Claus, there were some gifts for everybody, but on the 5th of December, a person of the village dressed up like St. Nicholas and had a stick and a bag of coal, and came to the door, and that I remember, and asked if we were good or not, and we were petrified because his voice was so, so frightening. And of course, my sister and I remember, I just shook, and I don't remember what my sister was doing, but anyhow, we said we were good. And so he took a handful of candy and threw it on the floor, and we got to pick that up, and then he left. And that was it.
Jeez.
So he went around, you know, to the different houses in the village, and the next village, which wasn't that far away. It was just up the hill. But the part that I remember about Christmas was my aunt peeling oranges, which were a special treat back in those days, in the 1931 days. They had to be imported from, you know, other countries, and so an orange was very expensive.
Yeah.
And she peeled them so that the rind was just, you know, one continuous thing. She was very, very careful, and then we got to eat this orange, which was a special treat. At that time, I think people appreciated little things more than we do today.
Yeah.
As your grandmother probably has told you too. Today it's, you know, everybody has what they want. My father finally came, and I don't remember that much about him. I do know getting together with various relatives for various things. And then we came back in think it was March or April. And on the ship, there was a very, very rough seas. We all got very seasick, especially my father and my mother. They were both seasick. And a porter would come in and bring, you know, bowls of soup or something, you know, so my sister and I had something to eat because there was no one to take us down to the dining room, mm-hmm. you know.
Mm-hmm.
And definitely, I mean, very, very, very seasick. And at that time, I don't think they had Dramamine or anything like that for people, but my father, I remember he was very, very ill from the rough seas. But came back because my father, being a nurseryman, had to get back and as he worked for Greening's Nurseries in Monroe, Michigan, which now the whole area is being covered by the Monroe County Jail and Horizons Unlimited. Mm-hmm. That was part of the nursery at that time. Anyhow, my father's history, I think, is very, very unique. His father had a nursery in Germany, and he went through the guild system, which is still in existence in Europe today, where people go through an apprenticeship of 3 years of working for someone and learning the trade, and then they go to someone else, and he did that with his own father's nursery. And then he went to Padua, Italy for 2 years to Scarabatti's and learned, had to work there as the journeyman part, and then came back to Germany and took master's exams. All through this time, at the end of every 6 months, even in apprenticeship, the state came around and these individuals would test you on what you were learning.
Yeah, they went through a lot just to...
Oh, yeah. And you didn't... If you didn't pass your exams after 6 months, then you didn't progress any mm-hmm. further. You had to pass... They constantly were checking on you throughout. And it was really a good system because it weeded out the people that were not interested in what they were doing.
Mm-hmm.
But it also... People wanted to excel, so they were very good at what they were doing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. and that system still exists because my first cousin's son is starting his apprenticeship in mechanics, and his father is in head engineer at the crane factory for Liebherr in Ehingen, Germany,
mm-hmm.
and he's very, very, he knows what he's doing.
Yeah.
And so Tobias will learn the same trade.
Mm-hmm.
When we came back to America, I had learned all kinds of German songs and, of course, spoke the German language. And the following year, I started school. And I remember my father took me with the truck to Keeney School, which was near the corner of Lunapeer Road and the Dixie Highway. And it was a one-room school, and I remember my teacher was his name was Mr. Yeager, who later joined the Navy and was commissioned. But anyhow, that was his... At that time, teachers did not have to go to school as long as they did today. They went like a year, and they could teach.
Jeez.
So he was my teacher, but I couldn't speak any English because they had spoken German to me all summer,
yeah.
And I could not speak one word of English. And so, of course, I couldn't communicate with the kids, and if I opened my mouth, they thought I was funny, and they started laughing at me, and I didn't want to go back to school. So my parents kept me home for about a week and started speaking English with me, and as a child, it didn't take long before, you know, it changed over. So they convinced me, and the teacher came to the house and said I should come to school, and I would, you know, listen and be very careful. So I didn't open my mouth. mm-hmm. unless I knew what I could say.
Yeah.
And it took a while, but it did help. And I do have a picture of my my first class,
mm-hmm.
which was really funny. And in our school, we had, you know, first through the eighth grade, there was no kindergarten mm-hmm. or anything like that. And there was one other girl in my class, and she and I did not hit it off, and never did. And I think if I met her today, I still wouldn't like her. Just terrible. Having immigrant parents, my parents associated with a lot of people in the Monroe area who were of German extraction. There were names that are still prevalent in Monroe, like Meleisen, Bose. There's a Mr. Bose who still works, I think he's in his mid-70s, he still works at Martin Shoe Store.
Oh, really?
Two or three days mm-hmm. a week, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, gray-haired Frank Bose. And, but it, when we were children, I can remember going to these various houses, like on Sundays for visiting. There was no television. You visited people. If you didn't, people didn't have much money, but they did make a point of visiting different people. Mm-hmm. My mother and dad lived in the country, so we had chickens, and my father raised pigs. So in the wintertime, you know, in the fall, we would butcher, and so we would have all kinds of meats and everything, and my mother canned vegetable soups and all kinds of things, and so people would come out, they knew that we had food, and it would be, you know, people would bring a cake or something, and they would have a Sunday dinner together.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting enough, one of these people who has passed away now, who and his son has passed away, was Ed Knievich, the founder of Lazy Boy Chair
mm-hmm.
Company.
Uh-huh.
And Ed and his wife used to come and visit my mother and dad because Ed's parents came from Germany,
mm-hmm.
and he wanted to keep up the German language, so he became a good friend of my father's.
Mm-hmm. Jeez.
And I can remember when I was teaching at Jefferson, I would run into him over at the Maple Clinic in Monroe because he went to Dr. Ewing, who has also since passed away. But Ed Knievich was and his wife were very, very good friends of my parents.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, to think that he was a billionaire, I mean, it's just unreal. But he was just a nice, ordinary person and would come out and stop and see mm-hmm. them, you know.
Yeah.
There was a family that he and Mr. Shoemaker rented at the garage. Now, this is history.
Mm-hmm.
This is real history. There's a lot of things that I want you to know about our family, Stephen. It's kind of interesting because of the German heritage. Mr. Shoemaker just passed away. He and his son donated the organ to the losing home in Monroe.
Mm-hmm.
When Mr. Shoemaker and Mr. Knievich were working on that chair, which was the original for the Lazy Boy that looked like an outdoor piece of furniture
uh-huh.
that's been shown in the Monroe Evening
yeah.
News. And I'm trying to think of the name of the people that they rented the garage from. They were a couple that were German extraction. They didn't have any children. And they had an extra section in their garage, and so he rented this garage.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where they worked on this particular chair.
What did you say that was around here?
In Monroe.
Jeez.
Oh, I wish I could think of those people's name. I wish my mother is gone now. I can't ask her. But I remember those people in the worst way because my mother always talked about them. I was. They, but they, when Ed and Mr. Shoemaker started that chair, and they were building them in this garage,
mm-hmm.
they wanted to sell some stock to different people. My father and mother were stupid and didn't buy any stock in the company because they started this little company. Dr. Ewing did. There were a lot of people in Monroe did.
Mm-hmm.
But these people that had the garage didn't want any part of it. They just wanted their rent.
Mm-hmm.
Well, when the chair took off, then all of a sudden this couple said, hey, we should have a share of this because you did it in our garage.
Yeah.
And Mr. Knavish said no.
Uh-huh.
He said, we paid you rent.
Mm-hmm.
And he wouldn't give them any share of it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the story that I love about it, because this couple were really weird. But on holidays, we always got together with my father's cousins in Toledo. They were first cousins, and they were married into a large German families. And so our holidays were spent of going into Toledo on Christmas Eve and staying overnight, singing Christmas carols, and of course, at that time, people didn't have money to go out and buy beer or any wine or anything like that. A lot of them made homemade wine, and they enjoyed a glass of wine in the evening with German Christmas cookies. And from the time that I can remember, my mother never baked less than 10 or 15 different kinds of Christmas cookies until she passed away. She was died at 91, and when she was 89 yet, she was still baking cookies.
Jeez.
Yeah. And my daughters have carried on the tradition. Kathy called me last night for a couple of recipes.
Uh-huh.
When I was with Eileen in Indiana last week, she was making German Springerlin.
Mm-hmm.
And so they are a long-consuming kind of cookie to make.
Uh-huh.
Because you have a special rolling pin, and you get to have one this morning.
Oh, gee, thanks.
You have to bake them. You have to cut them out,
mm-hmm.
and let them set overnight, and then they puff up. And that is a traditional German Christmas cookie.
Oh, these are pretty good.
Aren't they?
Mm-hmm.
So, but that... My mother always said that America was too commercialized, and I'm beginning to believe her because I'm going nuts with Christmas too.
Mm-hmm.
That was the tradition. You had some. You joined family, friends. You enjoyed the evening with your cousins or your relatives, and gifts were not important. It was the feeling of singing songs together. The family that we did a lot with were my dad's cousin's in-laws, and their name was Haas, and one played the piano, one gentleman played the piano, one played the violin, and the women could sing. Like I still think back on those evenings, how beautifully they sang one German Christmas carol after the other,
mm-hmm.
and one would stop when they would finish one, and then they would just start in with another one.
Mm-hmm.
And by 11 o'clock, everybody got their coats on and went to midnight mass, and we kids were, after we came back from church, we were thrown into bed, and the next morning there was always something under the Christmas tree for us. Maybe
yeah.
it was a new doll, or
mm-hmm.
maybe it was a toy that maybe my grandmother had sent. I have a doll that my grandmother sent to me when I was 5 or 6.
Mm-hmm. Jesus.
Yeah, I've got her upstairs. She's really, really old. And I had her hanging in the other house, and I gotta find a place to put her
mm-hmm.
here. But this is what we did at Christmas time, and
mm-hmm.
then Easter was also a very special event.
Mm-hmm.
When my sisters and my families were my girls and her kids were at that age of, you know, hunting Easter eggs and everything.
That's about a half hour right there, so that'd do it. Okay, thanks a lot.